Welcome to the Lavo Show podcast. Conversations with outstanding human beings whose love has been inspired and transformed by Osho. Take a deep breath and enjoy the show.
Hello and thanks for tuning in. My name is Swaram and I'm the host. Today our guest is Vandana. Vandana is an ex-actress since the age of 17, who wanted something more than that and eventually arrived to Osho in 1974. Vandana lived with Osho in Punawan until 1981. I'm so happy to have Vandana on the show and I hope you enjoy it. Vandana, welcome to the show. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you, Swaram.
Great. So to start, Vandana, tell us a bit about you and your story before meeting Osho.
Well, I was, I guess, a product of that era of the 60s and 70s, where there was a permission or an attraction to breaking the rules and looking for more. People were breaking conventions. Within myself, I think I was quite a timid person, but I always had a wild streak. And I tried many things. I tried to calm myself down by getting married at a very young age. Nothing was working for me, but I was trying different things. And there was a hunger for something more, something bigger, but I didn't know what it was. And really everything was failing. And I had been a student of a lot of ability, potential, but always seemed to shoot myself in the foot or never follow through with anything. And, yeah, so it was, I guess, a life of searching. But before I came to Osho, I had completely dropped out of my marriage, my career, and I had gone to America to do therapy because I realized I had to unwind, unravel. That became very clear. For me, the very first thing that, and this is a thread that comes up if I tell my story, is about sound, about music. And I heard John Lennon's music, and he was making this album with Yoko when he came out of Primal Therapy. And when I heard that, I went, that I have to do. And within a year or so, I was in a primal institute in America. And it was the beginning of my journey. So, and then, of course, when I got to India, we actually had that therapy in the ashram. You know, there was something very truthful coming through primal therapy. And Osho spoke about this when he spoke about the therapies and how it was channeled from very ancient knowledge from Janov, who founded Primal Therapy, had channeled that it was very, very much like back to Patanjali in ancient yoga times in India.
Oh, wow, that's really interesting. Never connected Primal Therapy with Patanjali. That's very interesting. So how did you come to Osho from the Primal Therapy to India in Pune? And then I would love to hear your first meeting with Osho.
Okay, well, I did a year in primal therapy in America, and it was very profound. And very quickly, I started moving from the catharsis where you just lie in a room and scream for your parents to this space of silence was happening to me so in the heart, and I did not understand, and nor did the therapist. They just want you to keep screaming and pounding the mat. And so within very quick time, I went, no, there's something more happening. And I heard of a therapist who was doing meditation through primal. So I went to her and that started to open some more space. And a lot of things started happening quite quickly. By the end of that year, I had to leave America because my visa expired. And that therapist who I was then with connected me with a group of therapists or people in Spain who had a growth center called the Finca La Foyenca, which was at a farm there. And it was like a European version of what was happening at Esalen, where there were lots of therapists coming from all over Europe, and people were coming there to do these processes, these formats for in a self-inquiry, self-investigation, some of which were very intense, like encounter, and then others of which were more like the enlightenment intensive, where you sat in the room and asked the question, who am I? There was just many, many forms of therapy. And towards the end of a 3-month intensive at that center, an Osho Sannyasin called Poonam came down to run some meditation, and she ran the dynamic, and we did the dynamic, and I knew nothing of what this was, except she was wearing this orange clothes with this peculiar picture around her neck. When Osho's voice came in at the end of that meditation, which it used to be he would, after all of the catharsis and the jumping and everything, his voice would come in and guide. And that did it. When I heard that voice, I was finished. That was it. You know, that voice, that was it. And so from Spain, which is where I was there, I went to England, had a very unhappy love affair with a man who then became a sannyasin. He actually followed me to India, that same story. But he was a therapist. He was doing therapy in the group. You know, it was this whole movement. Everybody was just doing therapy, therapy, therapy. But the seed had been sown. And within a few months, I found myself writing to Osho, probably drunk, because I was always drunk as well in those days. But I wrote thinking he would say, my God, no, you are far too impure. We don't, and I got a name just sent back to me. And I was really quite reluctant. I mean, this was for me, I had been doing all of this growth, you're doing growth. So the whole point of growth movement is to become somebody. You're going to become better, clearer, more powerful. And I knew when I heard that voice that it was a kiss of death, actually, to me becoming bigger, better, more powerful. So I was quite reluctant to go to India. But I went to India with a woman, Divya, who was a primal therapist. And she said, come with me and, there's some interest. We might do primal therapy in India, blah, blah. I went with her thinking I would be there just a few months. So I went quite reluctantly. I was not very happy, my life was starting to fall apart, and this felt like not going to be bringing it together. So, I arrived in Pune in time for Osho's birthday at the end of 1974, and I stayed for 7 years. But when I went, I said to Osho, I said, we've heard other stories. He said, how long are you staying? And I said, oh, 1 month or so, because I was going to go back and help Poonam. That's right, in the London Center. And he just laughed and said, you stay a little longer. And I went, okay. And it gradually, within a few months, I was moving in the ashram and I started working. And then I ended up being there 7 years. But ended up, it's not a very accurate description. I was absolutely immersed in the ashram, total devotee to the hilt. And that process started to happen really quite quickly from the time I arrived in India, quite miserable, reluctant. And what did it for me was the dynamic meditation. It just changed me. And I did it intensely, and it just changed me, more than any therapy that I'd done had changed me. And I became happy, I became joyous, I became grateful, which is the meaning of Vandana. And so that's a bit about how I came to Osho.
Wow, that's so beautiful. And just to pick up on your last point about dynamic meditation, I personally have a similar story. I've tried different things. I was quite miserable in my teens and, nothing really could help. And then I decided that's it, is enough. And I started doing dynamic meditation, and I did it for 4.5 years. And after that, I'm a totally different person. And that's why I'm so passionate about dynamic. And then, hearing your story, how you arrived to Osho, and it feels to me that one trait of Osho Sannyasi is that we are all mostly a bunch of crazy guys. And let's say it, Osho is a crazy master who attracts crazy people. And with crazy, I mean people who refuse the status quo, people who don't buy the story told by the society, people who are looking for alternative ways to the conventional route, which is clearly not working. So what did you find in Osho that satisfied your thirst for something different?
Well, he was completely wild. I mean, he was off the scale in terms of this wild quality. He was, you know, when you therapists, it's again, as I'm harking back to this thing of, it's about, you know, becoming more evolved and powerful and crystallized as a human being, was for Osho, for me, was shattering. Now, this interesting with this dynamic meditation, because Osho actually told me to stop. And this is a something that is very, for me, pivotal in my story, that I will go until, you know, with no limits. And he told me one day, you just stop. He said, listen to me, stop everything. Because I was doing 3-4 meditations a day, I was doing dynamics, so I would extend it into 2 hours. And one time when I was working in publications and we had to take the galley proofs down, we'd pick them up down in Mumbai, and I would go down onto Juhu Beach and do the meditation at like 5 in the morning with a blindfold on, jumping on the sand and doing this thing for more than an hour, 2 hours. And when I took off the blindfold, all these Indian people were walking up and down Juhu Beach with their dogs, looking at this mad woman. But, you know, I was so obsessed with this meditation. I would never have stopped. And there's a point one day Osho goes, stop, now sit. And that is, you see, no therapist, no most teachers, they would not have that. He saw in me, it was like an addiction, you know, which I have a prone to, but there was a point where it was no longer to be useful. So, yes, you must do dynamic and do it with full intensity, but only a master could tell you when stop. And that is something that was to me incredible. And it happened, he pulls out the rug where other teachers, they build up a nice carpet, a beautiful carpet, cosmic stories, whatever. He pulls out the rug. There is chaos, you know, there, and that I trusted instinctively when I met him. You see, when I first met Osho, I did not see this thing of unconditional love. I saw, it was like looking into infinite darkness, infinite emptiness. And it was actually quite terrifying, and yet it was absolutely like choiceless. I had to go into that. And, you know, I look in his eyes, yes, he's beautiful, smiling, laughing, talking, but you look in those eyes, there's no person there. I had never seen that before. There's nobody behind those eyes. And that was the quality that you cannot describe this to people, because they describe a beautiful teacher. I've met many teachers. I've also met several enlightened people apart from Osho. None have that quality of utter emptiness. And that is the I had no choice when I saw that. I was finished, but not finished, defeated. This, you know, this opportunity to be with the master and all of the crazy stuff that happened, part of it is disintegration and chaos. And the muscle tone to integrate that into your life or to accept it is what we learned in being in such blessed proximity to Osho. That's not what most spiritual traditions are about. This quite opposite. And it's very difficult to describe that to people unless they are looking for that. And you see, my talking about alcoholics and is because Osho also said once, he said, I love the overdoers. These are my people, the people that overdo, the people that will go to the edge, that are going to, in a sense, annihilate themselves. There is an instinct in there that you are actually looking for the divine, but you're doing it through the bottle and it doesn't work. Or you're doing it through heroin or whatever and it doesn't work. But that attraction is actually an attraction to the divine. And I have never heard of any teacher, quote unquote, let alone a master, who worked with that in Disciples. And yeah, so I knew I was, he was my master beyond, and continues to be my master. This, he is the most extraordinary master I believe has ever been on this planet. So for those of us who had the chance to be with him in the body, something pretty rare.
Well, thank you for sharing that. And I personally have not met Osho in the body, but I feel in the same way. I feel like he's the most extraordinary master ever worked on planet Earth. Mm. And it's just, I have no words. And also, in my experience, I realized that only very beautiful souls become addicted to alcohol and drugs. Mostly are very sensitive people who cannot accept injustice and violence, which is all around us. And possibly one of the reasons why people drink is because through alcohol, you can quieten the mind. You can, when you're drunk, your mind shuts up. So in your experience, because you mentioned a few times that, you know, you were drinking. So I understand you have been dealing with alcohol in your life. So do you agree with this? Is this your experience that you were drinking because you couldn't cope with your mind?
Yes and no. Alcohol, when I first discovered it in my teens, I was very insecure and nervous. And it gave me a freedom to be wild, to be an extrovert, to be crazy, you know, in the way that I wanted to be, but I was too wimpy, too scared inside. So it gave me freedom. Yes, it also was that the attraction is to just shut down this nervous, the mind is part of it, that nervous, crazy disposition. But it was for me also, I wanted to be wild. I wanted to be free. And that spirit, you know, I think is in many, many people, who are attracted to alcohol and drugs, is that yearning for a bigger reality than is inside your own small mind and emotions. And you want to expand and go into, yeah, I wanted to go to the edge and I wanted to be free. And of course it could not work and did not work, but that drive was there powerfully. And that is what led me to Osho. And that is what made me absolute Osho devotee. Because that was what he was, what that yearning was about. And you don't find that in the, you know, the spiritual traditions and the churches and the, you know, it's all because it's controlled by human structures and human minds. Always this, it falls short, but there is still that spirit in so many of the religions, and the yearning that people have for God, whatever God is the yearning to be free. And yet we are free essentially, but we forget that this is the state of the human life. So in answer to your question, it is a long answer, but yes, partially it's to sedate the hyperactive nervous system and busy, busy brain, but also because there's the opportunity to expand beyond the limitations of your individual small mind and small consciousness into something vast. That's the attraction. And it's through the drugs, all forms of drugs. I understand it deeply, and it's something that, you know, alcoholism in Alcoholics Anonymous is said to be a self-diagnosed disease. So when you describe relatives who are drinking, people can be very big drunkards, but not necessarily an alcoholic. There is a difference. There's something, perhaps it's genetic. I always had this desire to wipe myself out from a very young age. And that took some coming to terms with, and it happened after being with Osho in Pune 1, which was a part of my story. But yes, Osho never said, because he was a tantric master, you see, so there was no, none of these rules you get in so many of the ashrams, of, you know, the brahmacharya, no sex, no alcohol, no drugs, control. You could eat what you want. You could do what you want. Do it with awareness. Very radically different to most ashrams and spiritual organizations. Scary.
It is scary. It is scary because it's much easier to just follow the rules and do what you have been told. Whereas, you know, you're free to do whatever you want. Just be aware. Sounds easy, but then there are lots of risks attached to it. So I wanted to pick on something you mentioned before that, you know, you are always attracted to go to the edge. And that's how I feel. Osho works, you know, he mentioned so many times, just be total. Whatever you do, do it totally. Because only when you're total, you have a chance to go beyond it. You're done with it. You know, there is nothing hungering, nothing pulling you back. You complete that action and then you forget about it. So, you know, I feel like the attraction towards drugs and alcohol and the attractions towards Osho meditation, even dynamic, you know, it really pushing your limits to go totally. And then you have a chance to go beyond the mind. So do you feel there is a link there? Is that part of your experience?
Oh, yes, definitely. I mean, that meditation was so scientifically designed, as you said, for the Western mind. I tried meditation before I went to India. And I did my, you know, the primal therapy. I got some glimpses, but I would try sitting cross-legged, try watching my breath, try these different things. And I could never, ever reach any silence. My first experience of silence was in that third stage of the dynamic. And it comes from that hammering, jumping, whoo, 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 whoo. When you stop and you freeze, that space, I never before knew that silence. And that, you know, that it takes all of that full catharsis to be, and we always had to do it in a group, although I became, as I said, so obsessed, I could do it by myself for 2 hours, you know, because I want, you know, but that breathing was just devilishly difficult to breathe like that. You know, it's not a natural way of breathing deliberately because it's chaotic, because it's breaking up all the holding patterns. And, you know, the breathing and the jumping, the breathing and then the catharsis. You know, catharsis is so essential. This is what primal therapy is about, catharsis. And I remembered something recently when I was in primal therapy. I was once sent to hear this Tibetan gong. They sent us as an exercise when I was in the isolation of primal therapy, to hear this Tibetan gong be played. And that was extraordinary because this gong was used with the monks and they would play it twice a day, apparently. And you just sit and they start striking this gong and involuntarily your body goes into catharsis and you will be screaming or laughing or crying or howling, all for the space of the sound which hits different chakras in the body. And then when the gong finishes, you fall straight on the ground empty. Now, this was used by the monks to empty out, and they did it twice daily. Very scientific. One has to empty out because we're full of clutter. And the dynamic which was created by Osho was to empty out and create space so that there could be a glimpse of silence. So, yeah, was it is, continues to be. He said you can't sit and do this TM and, like, just, you know, a bit of nice chanting and om, and, you know, it doesn't work for a cluttered, crazy, overloaded Western brain and mind and emotional field. We're just too overloaded.
Yeah, Chetan and I are totally in love with dynamic. We are convinced that dynamic will be the most popular meditation because now meditation is growing, is expanding, everyone wants to meditate, but it's just taken as a technique to, you know, it's like a sleeping pill, you know, all these techniques that are, you know, all this mindfulness, people think that just sitting in silence 5 minutes, they will, you know, improve. It's all bullshit, really. Let's say.
Yeah, it's all about mind control. And that's what Osho said about TM. He said, it's just nice to, you know, you control your mind. You get your mantra and you do the mantra and you're controlling the mind. It's all about the mind. It's not about going beyond the mind or getting out of the mind. It's about calming the mind, having a nice, reasonable, controlled mind. this is so tedious, it's so bullshit, it goes nowhere. But this is mostly, and I think there is, you see, you say you make dynamics are popular. Dynamic is not nice, you know, it's not pleasant, it's not, it's very, it's work. You've got to really push. So you have to be hungry for some transformation, not looking for peace of mind to really grasp dynamic meditation. And the majority of people are looking for comfort and peace. Nothing wrong with that, but you don't wake up looking for comfort and peace. And that is the radical difference of Osho, you see. It was not about giving us comfort and peace. I mean, yeah, there was beauty and there was great joy, and but there was, you know, the chaos of the normal process of being alive is unreasonable. It is uncomfortable. It is painful. It is chaotic. And it's not that you want to worship discomfort or something. It's not that. But to be attracted to dynamic, I just, all I can say is there has to be in you a very great hunger to for a great transformation, or to, you know, not that you just want to have a more peaceful mind in a crazy chaotic world, because then you need to go to TM and do some nice yoga postures, and there's nothing wrong with that.
I thank you so much for this, because actually it's bringing clarity also to me, because, you know, many times I feel like Osho is such a jewel and dynamic is such a powerful technique, and I want to go out and just shout to everyone, hey, look, do this technique and it will change your life. But then, as you say, this is not for everyone. It's because it's tough. And it's for people, as you say, who are hungry for transformation. And most of the people, all they want is to sleep better and just keep doing what they're doing. Whereas if you do dynamic, it's going to change. You know, you may need to leave your partner or leave your job, or maybe stay in whatever you're doing, but you will be transformed. It's not conciliatory method. It's going to create, like, it's a revolution, it's an inner revolution. Yeah. And you have to be ready for it. So thank you, because makes me feel more at peace, because if people don't come to dynamic, it's also because, you know, it's not for everyone.
It's not for them. And you know, also when I went to Osho, I was in the growth movement. I had been in the growth movement for over 2 years. And the people I knew were people strongly committed to growth and doing all of this. And people said to me, you really have to go that far, or you don't have to go that far. And I went, yeah, I do. Because he was contradictory to what people were doing in this nice growth movement. Really, he was threatening that, not by anything particular, but just by who he was. And so it's not polite, it's not reasonable, it will be the end of you as you know, or as you've been conditioned to become. And it's not that people, a lot of many sannyasins have been very high achieving and go into the world and do wonderful things, but you're not identified with it. You don't believe it's you. I think that's so it's very radical. And when I say that, you know, it can sound like, oh, we're special, we're this select esoteric group of people who are sufficiently awake to, you know, and I don't really mean that, because that also, from being with Osho, would be also have the rug pulled out from under it, because the ego gets hold of everything. And I was a prime example of that, where I really thought I was very advanced spiritual seeker. And that was, yeah, many sannyasins I think would fall into that, because if you're with the best master, then there must be something great about you, right? So, yeah, there's always the trap. The mind will get hold of everything.
Well, you have such clarity, and it's beautiful to talk to you, because, you know, you really put things into perspective, and I really appreciate that. So thank you. Going back to alcohol and AA, I have a friend who has alcohol problems, and what this friend said, that when he joined AA, they told him alcohol is not curable. There is no chance. It looks like, you know, once you start, you become addicted, you're doomed forever. Is that true?
It's one way of describing it. And many people in AA talk about it being a disease. I don't use that word. I call more a disorder. I think it was in me was this, attraction to wiping myself out, or to self-destruction. They say that alcoholics don't have an off switch. And it isn't necessarily to do with quantity, although for me it did become much more about quantity after Pune 1. In Pune 1 it was very much on the back burner. But, you know, at this stage I could say that there were very good friends of mine, sannyasins of the same vintage as myself, who were also alcoholics, who went to AA or who really are now dead. And they're dead from alcohol and drugs. It was a choice. And for me to go to AA, I had to separate from sannyasin. And it was not easy. And I fought against it. There's a wonderful thing Leonard Cohen says, I fought against the bottle, but I had to do it drunk. Took my diamond to the pawn shop. But that don't make it junk. Cohen wrestled with alcohol. His whole, he didn't stop drinking and smoking cigarettes till quite late in life. And then he sang a lot about how he no longer drank alcohol or smoked. But he used those things. And he's someone I love very much. He was really a fine, fine teacher in his way. But yeah, to answer what alcoholism is, it's a label. And I've had in Alcoholics Anonymous some problem with identifying as an alcoholic. And at times I take a break from it and I go back to it largely, almost entirely now, because I want to be useful to people struggling with the disease or the disorder, whatever you call it. Because I have a story of my own, which I think people relate to. I'm not religious. I'm not a Christian. There's a lot of, there will be people in AA who, like any organization, who will teach it a certain way. And there's the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, which are actually profoundly spiritual. If you work that program, if you really work it, it is profoundly spiritual, and it refers to prayer and meditation, to you have to drop the ego. If you are going to recover from alcoholism, your ego has to go. I recognize this as soon as I went to AA, very reluctantly, but by then I was drinking a bottle of tequila a night and it wasn't pretty, And I knew it when I got there. This is the same. And I wrote to Osho and I said, I am now in my next stage of my journey. Now, I don't know if he got that letter, but it had to go through Sheila at the ranch. I doubt it. It didn't matter to me because I knew it was the same story. Drop the ego and clear out everything that's in the way of consciousness. And so that is the work if people do the AA program. Unfortunately, it can be made into a set of rules and regulations because people like rules and regulations and telling people what to do. And that part of any program I have always a problem with. But I will talk about that. And that I know is helpful to many people when they come in and they hear in AA the talk of God and they go, oh God, I'm out of here. Well, I can say, yeah. And there are also many atheists in AA. There is a spirit of people who are prone to annihilate themselves through alcohol and drugs. And if I had not stopped, I don't think I'd be alive, really. And sometimes I wonder how I am alive, and I'm very healthy alive at 70 because so many people I knew, the man I married, two men I married, and many of my sannyasin friends are dead from alcohol and drug abuse. Because they couldn't stop. And they chose to do that. And that's a choice.
I appreciate that you say it's a choice, because that gives honor to the individual. At the end of the day, you know, these people, because it's easy to just say they're a victim of this and that, but you're saying, you know, it's your choice if you want to keep doing it. So, and somehow...
You know, and this is Sanyasins who just decided to, that it, and, you know, they can say, well, it's just the body is pumping alcohol and drugs into the body. For me, there could never be any awareness. Now, this was a point where, you know, Gurdjieff worked with alcohol and he would have his disciples do exercises where they sat at a banquet table and they was feasting and drinking, and then he would just go, stop! And they had to immediately be conscious. And he worked with different exercises like this. I love Gurdjieff very much. And, Osho, once there were some messages sent to me about drinking when I was in the theater group, which was part of my work in the ashram, that came through Lakshmi. Vandana has the habit. You must be aware. When we were going out into India, parts of which India were teetotal, they were dry. And always I would have to find some way to smuggle my alcohol because I had to have my alcohol, particularly when I came off stage. I was just, you know, very nervous that I felt I needed it like medicine. But it was pointed out that there was an issue with it, but I didn't get it. I didn't get it as to what that meant. I only know that from the time Osho left Pune and went to America, they introduced bars into the ashram. There were bars everywhere at night. And what we were doing was pulling down the ashram, which was a very intense and very confronting process because this beautiful ashram, which had been built, gorgeous place, you know, had to be destroyed. And people found that, you know, it was pretty emotional. First of all, overnight, Osho had gone. Gone. We're just told he's gone. And then we're destroying the ashram. And then being told we're to go back to the West. And for me, what happened then, I can see retrospectively that I think in psychology terms, I hit a place of abandonment. And what I did with that was to go into a kind of rebellion. And I embraced alcohol with both arms and hands and, you know, and just started then to drink really heavily, really, really heavily. And I had been one of the golden, you know, ashram residents, one of the privileged ethereal, you know, ashram princesses. And I descended into intense drinking after 7 years of proximity to Osho. So that story for me is very important for me to tell because it is my truth, and only by coming to grips with the alcoholism and surrendering to a quite humbling program of Alcoholics Anonymous was I able to integrate back with my Osho self, if you like, because the alcohol had to go completely and absolutely. No drugs, no alcohol. And that is the, you know, when you, in A, they say the only cure is abstinence. And I absolutely believe that. There is no way to learn to drink like a so-called normal person, whatever that is. And there's nothing wrong with alcohol. It's a very normal part of life. And many, you know, and sannyasins are loved all that because it's, you know, it's fun and it's, you know, for me, no. So many sannyasins would say, oh, you know, and most of my friends are sannyasins, but they don't really understand it and they can't understand it because they're not alcoholics. They accept it. But, you know, the fact that I say I go to AA, it's like, well, but you've done all that meditation. You're with Osho. How can you go to AA? I love AA.
Well, thank you so much for being so honest and open. I appreciate that. And, you know, I feel like with Osho, there are absolutely no rules, you know, like Osho, it's so respectful of our individual freedom, individual choices. Do you feel like going to AA, enjoy, you know, like, well, I don't get this idea that if you meditate, you can go to AA because, you know, it's the same thing that sometimes people say, if you meditate, you can't work in the corporate world. That point is not about what you do and what you are identified with. It's about your inner truth and try to be aware in whatever you do. What have you received from Osho that helped you deal with the alcohol that you could not find anywhere else?
Well, the emphasis on awareness and the realization that for me, I lost consciousness as soon as I had one drink in my system. Now, if I hadn't experienced some profound, it's not even an experience, but for what happened to me with Osho, I would not have been able to eventually, reluctantly recognize that there was no way for me to drink and have any consciousness. And the consciousness, I had this horror that I was, or this fear that I was going to die drunk, which was on the cards, the way I was drinking into a stupor every night, in the 80s after Funa One. And that for me was very, oh God, this is so contradictory to everything, how I want to leave the body, which is with my eyes wide open, experience death with awareness. How are you going to do that if you're in an alcoholic stupor? You know, that started to, so all of this is, but for having been with Osho, I think I probably just would have been another sad case, you know, misfit, self-destructive, could have been an actress, could have been a whatever, drunk herself to death. You know, I think that could have been. Instead, I had this magnificent life, you know, which is not over. Because of Osho. Only because of Osho. And I used to have this sometimes when I'd write these questions to Osho, and I always had this fairly dismal self-image. I always felt there was something a bit almost dirty about me, something that was not good, you know, and I'd write and say, oh, I'm so asleep. And he would just say, just relax. He would give me grace, you know, always give me grace, where my own self-image was this negative, you know, yeah. And so that again was, you know, that Osho, and the other thing that really with Osho too, is profound questions, because we could ask him questions in the darshan. And I asked him questions about many things, and one was about relationships, because I was a failure at relationships, and I had a lot of them, and I was a failure. And he just looked at me and he said, you're not the kind to be in a couple. You are more wild. Can you imagine when he looks at you, he says, you are more wild? And I knew then I would never have a steady relationship. And he said, once in a while, when you become too much of crazy, you be with somebody. And then you say goodbye with gratitude. This I'm paraphrasing, but this was like, I was not even 30. And I knew this truth, you see, that I would be, that this wildness, which I found embarrassing, because I wanted to be like the earth mamas in the ashram, the mediums, all the beautiful, you know, those are earth mamas. And I was this crazy chick, you know, but he's saying it's beautiful to be crazy, to be wild. So that, but the exploiting of that in getting drunk, that's the Leonard Cohen took your diamond to the pawn shop. The pawn shop doesn't make the diamond junk, but you're junking it. I was junking my diamond and it had to stop. But Osho showed me the diamond. I would never have seen the diamond but for Osho.
It really gives me a sense of how much Osho was just sharing light and love and respected every single person. And he could see through and just say, you are this type of person and you're beautiful and you are the way you are, and just go and enjoy it. You know, it's not that you have to change yourself and become someone else. And so that's great. And I can feel your wildness, and I can feel your vitality, and you're very much alive and kicking. And it's so beautiful to hear this, even just through the podcast. You know, your energy is, very alive and vibrant. So we are heading towards the end of the podcast, and I have three final questions I ask all the guests on the show. So the first one is, what's your morning routine? How does your morning look like in the first couple of hours of your day?
Okay, well, I still work full time, so I get up really early, earlier than my body would like to, because one thing I learned with Osho, he said to me once, your body needs discipline. This body needs discipline. The body that wants to get alcohol, you know, whatever, smoking, drinking. This body needs every day to be persuaded to get up and start breathing. So I get up, I make a cup of tea, I stand on my head for 5 minutes, I do some yoga, sun salute, then I get on my bicycle and I ride around the lake where I live, which is about 10 kilometers. It's not that far, but I pound on my bike. Or some days I do Arika, and then the Arika, I don't know if you know of this, but it was a consciousness system that was in America from this man from Chile called Oscar Ichazo, and he created this system called Arika. Many people in the ashram came from Arika. His system of a workout, I still do. I've been doing it since I was 26, so it's a very total physical workout that incorporates a yoga with fast breathing. So it's very dynamic. You get quite hot doing it. But it also has lots of stillness in it. So it's a beautiful process. We used to do it. A lot of us used to do it in Pune. I still do it now. So I do that. That's my morning. And then, and it is like a meditation itself. For me, a meditation is not so much I sit formally. I listen to a lot of music. So when before I'm going to work, I'm listening to a lot of mostly classical music. I love Italian, early Italian. Boccherini, music like this is just really beautiful. I listen to the Gurdjieff music. So music and movement, that is probably what I do to prepare for my day.
The second question, I guess you answered already, but it's, what's your favorite meditation and why?
Well, it's definitely music is a meditation for me and movement. I mean, very rarely do I just sit and meditate. And sometimes I think I should, but I don't. But music is a key. And if I mention how Osho's voice that brought me to him, the sound. So I have a particular, sensitivity to sound. And I will have music almost continuously playing, different forms of music. I mean, I love so many different forms of music, but it is a key. It just, my mind is not busy when I'm listening to music. And I think it is. It is definitely a gateway to the divine, hence so much music was. I played in the ashram. I played with the ashram musicians in satsang and in the dancing in the evening. That's, you know, I've always had a feeling that music is definitely the door for me. And also I must be physically active. As you get older, it takes more effort. There is quite a pull towards laziness, but the body needs this in order to stay functioning well. It's also a joy. It's a joy when I ride my bicycle very hard, so I can't, you know, just in the cold morning air. It's really beautiful space.
Okay, so the last question is, you lived the Osho experiment. You were one of the pioneers in this movement of creating a new man, Zorba the Buddha. What does it mean to you personally to be with Osho today in 2018?
It means that, you know, my life was forever changed. And there was no question of ever being able to have a so-called normal life, you know. So there's an acceptance of, as soon as there is any sort of, when I say chaos, I trust this process of life, that it is wild and it is chaotic. And the muscle tone to enjoy that, I only learned with Osho. You know, it's amazing to me to be still alive. I don't know how much time I have, you know, to be alive. It could be my last day today. I might live another 10 years. I don't know. But to be alive is just such a every day there is something new, And it's not like some great cosmic revelation. It's just this new space. I'm not able ever, even though I've tried, particularly with alcohol, to go to sleep. Nothing ever allows me to really go into that comatose state. First of all, life is too delightful. But also that fire was lit, and it was lit by a Buddha. It wasn't lit through reading. It wasn't lit through studying. It was lit through direct, intimate contact with an enlightened master of that we've never seen and we may never see again in this world. So that is never a way. It's in a way kind of low-key with me now because I'm not actively participating in any sannyas activities. I have a very small group of very good close friends like Bhagavati who are sannyasins. But it's who I am. And that was changed forever by Osho. And I'm so utterly grateful, which is the meaning of the name Vandana. And when he gave me that name, I wasn't grateful. I wasn't grateful much for anything, but it was a focus. That's a meditation. Because in Hindi, Vandana means prayer and it means gratitude. And Osho would say that prayer, true prayer, is a state of overflowing gratitude. It's not asking God for anything. It is a state where you are so grateful, you overflow. And that is, I think, something in my essential nature, which was shown by Osho and which continues with me today. I'm very grateful, very, very grateful to be alive and to be have been and be with Osho.
And I'm so grateful to you for sharing your story and for revealing for your love for Osho, which is absolutely crystal clear. And it's been real pleasure speaking with you, connecting with you. And I just wanted to thank you from the bottom of my heart.
And thank you and for what you're doing, because it really is a wonderful work that you're doing. And I appreciate being invited. It's a privilege. But thank you for doing this, because you will help reach many people. And even if you only reach very small people who are very hungry, as we say, and looking, what a beautiful thing. This is, it's very fine. So thank you, Swara.
Oh, thank you. Well, actually, I think I'm getting the most out of it, because I feel so privileged that I'm getting to know all you beautiful souls. And it's just so nourishing for me. And so I'll just keep going in and doing it for myself.
Okay, beautiful.
Okay, Vandana, thank you so much. Okay, and lots of love.
And to you.
Thanks, bye.
Thank you for listening to the Love Osho podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, you can show your appreciation by leaving a review on iTunes. Visit loveosho.com for new episodes, blogs, and much more.